Alex Sanchez was 7 years old in 1979 when he crossed the southern border of the United States along with his younger brother under the care of a coyote, a people smuggler. The start of the Civil War back home wouldn't come until the following year, when a gunman would assassinate Archbishop Oscar Romero, an outspoken critic of his government's ongoing campaign of torture and repression, as he gave mass in a church-run hospital in San Salvador. But the violence had been building for years. Several times, while on his way to school, Sanchez had passed the gruesome spectacle of a corpse dismembered by machete, which the army had left on display in the street as a sort of public warning. His parents had gone ahead a few years earlier to settle in Los Angeles. Now, at last, they had sent for him. Arriving in California, against the backdrop of Disneyland and the iconic Hollywood Hills that Sanchez knew from news broadcasts, it was possible to believe in all the promise of a new beginning. Gradually, the contours of their new reality came into focus. The family was crammed into a one-bedroom apartment in the neighborhood around MacArthur Park, a rundown section of central LA that had been abandoned a decade earlier in the flight to the suburbs. His parents were undocumented, working under the table. Sanchez felt the burden he represented as another mouth to feed, even as he bristled at the parental authority he had learned to live without. He spoke no English, and quickly learned that Salvadorans were viewed with disdain in the predominantly Mexican community. Sanchez's mother dealt with the pressures in her own way, becoming a Jehovah's Witness. She took Alex with her as she went from door to door in their neighborhood to proselytize, and to congregation, where he would give occasional sermons. Among his classmates, however, this only reinforced his isolation. Frequently bullied, he found himself alone at the bottom of an unforgiving food chain. Soon enough, Sanchez would find allies among the waves of Central Americans fleeing class-based struggles and the dismal economies that had produced them. Back in El Salvador, 250,000 people turned out for Archbishop Romero's funeral in 1980, when shadowy forces suddenly attacked the crowd, detonating explosives and shooting down at people from rooftops and windows. The country quickly descended into a vicious civil war, which pitted a coalition of leftist guerrilla groups against a right-wing government backed by Washington. Right-wing leader Roberto Dawison admitted, according to a declassified 1982 State Department memo, that the death squads stalking the population were in fact comprised of official security forces whose members use the guise of the death squad when a potentially embarrassing or odious task needs to be performed. Members of an infamous U.S.-created battalion would go on to massacre entire villages. This was the Cold War, and the threat of another communist victory in its backyard was something that Washington wanted to avoid. So the United States sent military advisors and materiel, spending more than $4.5 billion to prop up the Salvadoran regime over the course of a war that dragged on for 12 years and claimed 75,000 lives before ending in a stalemate. Throughout, most Salvadorans found themselves caught in the middle, as Joan Didion observed, in a country where the left had no interest in keeping peasants less radicalized, and the right remained unconvinced that these peasants could not simply be eliminated. Not surprisingly, roughly 1 million of them left, half of whom sought safety and a better life in the U.S. They settled mostly in Los Angeles, flooding into the neighborhood around MacArthur Park, where their outsider status was compounded by their legal reality as undocumented immigrants. Adhering to the standards set by the context of the Second World War, the U.S. limits its definition of a refugee to someone persecuted because of race, religion, nationality, political opinion, or social group. Those merely seeking a haven from generalized violence don't qualify. Political expediency has always played a role in U.S. refugee policy, though, and exceptions were made for those fleeing Washington's Cold War enemies, including communist regimes in Vietnam, the Soviet Union, Cuba, and Nicaragua. But to have made a similar exception for those fleeing Washington's ally would be to admit an uncomfortable reality of America's foreign policy. Churches and Central American immigrant groups joined forces to advocate for Salvadorans and Guatemalans, the latter involved in a devastating civil war that would claim 200,000 lives, filing a 1985 lawsuit that eventually secured them work permits and the opportunity to reapply for asylum.